my name's Martin SFP Bryant, and this is Geek Out Weekly. We've been off Spacecasts for a couple of weeks, but now Matt Navarra and I are back to make sense of the week's social media news as we discuss the contents of our Geek Out newsletter, which goes out every Friday. You can find the newsletter at geekout.co/profile/geekout if you'd like to follow along. But now over to Matt to get us started.
So yeah, one of the small things this week that was just a big deal to me, because it's such a silly little thing, is that Twitter now are looking at this feature for making it clearer when you're tweeting from one of your company accounts or your personal account, and so you don't make the dreaded error of tweeting out from an account when you're working as a social media manager that you don't really want to be tweeting from. And I had friends who used to manage accounts for things like 10 Downing Street as well as some of the biggest brands, and I bet they would love to have that feature installed as quickly as possible. Have you ever done that? Tweeted out from an account you shouldn't have done, Martin?
I'm sure I have. Yes, yeah, I'm sure I have. It's one of those things where you just get that one moment of it's the pain in your hands. I don't know if you get that kind of anxiety pang that goes through your hands. It's like,
I just push it. I've done it before when I've been on TweetDeck, and I pushed a tweet out from the next web I would imagine it would have been from. And then, because I've switched between different bits on TweetDeck and other things, I thought, oh my God, I've just sent that and it was something really bad. And then I think, oh no, I didn't. I'm all right. Okay. It's okay. So
the time the UK Prime Minister liked your tweet about GIFs on Facebook, that was
they, no they retweeted it was when
they retweeted
May,
it
Theresa May's number 10 Downing Street account retweeted a tweet about Facebook having GIFs for the first time, and then number 10 Downing Street quickly retracted that retweet. So that was quite amusing. I was like looking on the train, I was like, did Prime Minister just retweet my tweet? What the hell's going on? That was odd. In unrelated but still Facebook matters, the couple of things from this week was a feature for Facebook Stories. You know, Facebook is still really trying to, seems like, quite keen to get people to use Facebook Stories more, like they've been doing with Reels. They're putting stories in a more kind of prominent position, because at the moment when you're on Facebook in the app or in on desktop, of course, there's a little tray at the top, and that's basically where you get your stories feed from. But now there's been a notification that people have seen in their newsfeed saying that they're going to start seeing their friends' story posts from Facebook Stories in their newsfeed when they're scrolling through. It'll show you whatever was in their story. So you can't escape the stories. If you don't really want to see them, then I don't know, maybe there's an option to turn them off. Do you use Facebook Stories at all, or do you just use it in cross post from Instagram when you do
literally
it last?
Just cross posting? I use Instagram far more than I do Facebook. Facebook usage for me is generally scrolling through the app, liking a few things from friends, managing a Facebook group, and that's it really. Yeah,
I think you're probably one of many that does the same. I will just cross-post between the two, just whichever one I seem to be in at that time, as long as the same thing goes to both of them. I don't really distinguish with them at the moment too much, personally. In other news to do with TikTok, they've got this gaming hub. At the moment, it just seems to be in the Discovery tab. Excuse me, I'm going to cough for a moment. In the Discovery tab, where you can... you go at the top, there's a selection of different things that you can scroll through, the big features within TikTok for that week, whatever they're promoting, like Euros or whatever. And one of them is a gaming hub, but it doesn't seem that exciting at the moment. It just seemed to have some accounts that are worth following from the world of gaming that people are on TikTok, and then a few kind of top videos that are worth looking at. So who knows, maybe they'll do more with it, because everyone seems to want to do something with gaming anyway. Facebook has also got this like LinkedIn CV kind of creation tool. I don't know how long it's been there. It could have been there a while, but I think I've read something this week suggesting it might have been new, but just snuck out. And it's, if you go into, it's only on iOS for me, if you go into the job section of the app, and it will prompt you pretty clearly that you can create your own CV based on your information, on your profile, or maybe even your page, I'm not sure. And then it goes through a few questions, and then it gives you a really, really basic, it's not that exciting, CV, which you can use to apply for quick application of jobs within the iOS app. I don't think I've ever used the jobs feature in Facebook. Have you?
No. To be honest, I don't think I've applied for a job in years. So it's not something I've really needed to do. But for certain people in certain kinds of jobs, I can see jobs in Facebook being a good thing. And so if you're going to be applying for jobs, having a CV feature makes perfect sense. Yeah.
I'm just noticing, by the way, I'm on my iPhone, and it's giving me a message saying that reconnecting and not showing, not connecting to this space. But I'm assuming that we haven't got connection issues. If I have, someone will have to flag it to me. But at the moment, it keeps on giving me a weird message.
No, it's definitely coming through fine.
Oh, that's all good then. And also TikTok announced this, well, didn't announce actually, it was sort of leaked, or someone who has had the feature made it known to more people about Shoutouts, which is a tool which is kind of like a Cameo slash many other platform type thing, ripoff, where you can, as a TikTok creator, you can start selling like Shoutouts to people who, and make money off of it and charge them for it through TikTok for, you know, little clips and things. So if you're quite a big influencer or celebrity, this is another way you could monetize. I think I'm allowed to say, and if I'm not, I'm going to get in trouble, but I think I'm allowed. I'm part of this TikTok Tech Insiders Club thing that TikTok runs, which they do at a selection of people, not very many as far as I know. It's a new thing, and they go through a lot of bits and pieces that could be coming out and stuff. And it's always interesting to see which features they mention, which we're not allowed to talk about, and then the features we can, and then which ones actually make it out. And so some of them are starting to creep out now. So hopefully when they're more announced, we'll be able to discuss them more in this Twitter space as well. Other bit of big news this week was, well, from Norway. Did you see the story about the law change for requiring social media influencers and celebrities, which I didn't catch what the criteria was for that definition, by the way, that they have to disclose when a sponsored post contains an image or a video that's been altered or enhanced with a filter or an effect. So there's lots of good intention in that, isn't there? And I actually tweeted, and several other people I'm sure have tweeted about that as an idea, in terms of if you're doing something that makes you look not like yourself, maybe younger users would benefit from knowing that actually isn't how they really look, to help their self-esteem or just to make them realize what's real and what's not real in these days. But they can have, like all of these things, in unintended consequences, and will it even work? What do you reckon? Do you think that's a good addition if that's the way it goes?
Yeah, because if it was for all posts, then I think there'd be more room for debate about it. But I think with sponsored posts where people are getting paid for it, so it's an ad essentially, I think that they should be regulated like other ads are. And if there's any room for misleading people, now you could say that an ad on TV, probably, you know, the people in the ads have makeup on, and it might not be disclosed that they have makeup on, but you'd kind of assume they would. So just in the same way, I think with social ads, I think if you've got a pretense of authenticity, which is actually false because they're using touched up images, using filters, etc., then I think it's important to make sure that's clear in an ad. And I think so that makes perfect sense, that that regulation is catching up with the way that people advertise. I think it's fine.
And also, you know, I should a hat tip to Kayvon, who's joined us, I noticed, from Twitter. Hello. But I was just going to come on and talk a bit about Twitter's now doing more with labels as well. And so they've started talking, I don't know if it's Inplacia, is it the parody label, and potentially having bot markers or labels and things. And there's other labels for lots of other things. And so it's kind of the in thing at the moment to label things as a warning, to give people more information, more choice. Yeah. But someone did mention to me, I don't want to claim it was my kind of thought, because I think someone might have tweeted it in response to me, but once you label everything or start labeling lots of things, those labels quite quickly lose their value, especially if they're not dynamic or changed in any way, because people can sort of blind to them, and then the value of them is lost a little bit. So
yeah,
I'm not sure how much of that is a problem as well.
Yeah, and also I think there is this whole thing of people making assumptions that certain things are bad for people's mental health, and then when they actually do a study of it, it turns out actually it's not that much of an issue. So all these things around what was it? There was something recently, there was a study recently that found that something that everyone assumed was bad for your mental health probably isn't actually that much. It's light, isn't it? It was light counts. And so obviously Instagram and Facebook have been looking at making visible light counts optional, and they've introduced that in Instagram. And actually, if you do a study in it, then it's not necessarily a clear-cut thing that they are absolutely things that are harmful, and actually it's more just an assumption that they're harmful. So maybe we've got another case of that here, but I don't think it's a bad thing that social ads are catching up in the regulation world.
Absolutely. Skip through some of the other small bits of news and then we'll get into the bigger stories that have gone on this week. But the some bits in the newsletter this week around, there's an article, isn't it, by, is it Ben Thompson that wrote it? I can't remember to check. But it's a really in-depth piece that I think Adam Mosery from Instagram shared out as well about kind of the evolution of Instagram, the past, the present, and the future of it. And it goes into quite a lot of detail around kind of, you know, the big shifts that the apps had to make to kind of move with the changing taste and trends in sort of social apps in the last 10 years. So yeah, it's the third item on the list in case you missed it, bit of the newsletter. But I'll tweet it out again after this as well, and I should try and share into the space. A few other things as well. There's a really good piece of writing done in the Vox, Vox.com, which is about deep fakes on TikTok and kind of, although the ability to create a deep fake like the ones we saw with the deep Tom Cruise ones, you know, that was spent months and expert hours from people trying to create those small TikToks, the ability of some of the AI and kind of the filters and the effects and all that kind of tech that's doing that now is getting to the point where it's really starting to be abused in a kind of creepy ways. And there was a story about a video that went viral this week, I think it was all the last couple of weeks on TikTok, around somebody that was basically making himself using some of this tech to look a lot younger, almost, well, basically below the legal age, kind of younger, and trying to lure people in terms of the content that they were putting out. Stuff, some really dark stuff, but it just starts to show you a little glimpse of, you know, into what kind of we're headed with some of this stuff, and it's going to be some of the new challenges for the platforms beyond all the existing problems that they have to tackle day to day anyway. But let's go into the kind of the main story that we've got in the newsletter, which is about Mr. Trump. We like discussing Trump. He's in the news again. As soon as I saw this story about, you know, Trump's suing, you know, Twitter's Jack Dorsey and Google's boss and Zuckerberg and everybody else, it just instantly just slightly glaze over, but also just for pure amusement, read through what the detail is. But for, you know, the headline really is it's a class action, isn't it? And so people who have been banned from Facebook who want to join in this kind of litigation against these platforms for being banned. Stuff can do so, but I think nearly universally everywhere I read, in terms of, you know, both legal experts as well as social media professionals and anyone else, it's just kind of like it's just more Trump hot air distraction tactics to move you away from something else that's going on, and it's just really not about that. What did you make of all of the kind of fanfare about this week?
I'm annoyed, actually, because in the Tech Revolution newsletter that I do on Wednesdays, I wrote the how much we hate our eyes roll and our fingers can barely touch the keyboards when we have to talk about Trump in the Geek Out newsletter, because he always seems to come up even though he's no longer president anymore. And literally like 2 hours later or an hour later or something, this news came out. I was like, we're going to have to do it again this week, aren't we? But it's just noise. It's just showboating. It's saying, hey, look, I'm still here, because this is something that probably won't even stand up in court if it gets, if it gets as far as going to court. It's just noise. It's just him trying to stay relevant, trying to raise money as well, because as soon as he announced it, did the press conference, put out the announcement, he was sending out fundraising messages to his massive mailing list saying, come and give us money for this legal action, it's the best thing ever, all that kind of thing. And it's just a great way of bringing in money. So whether he actually takes this case forward or not, he's getting a lot more money from his supporters who will throw money at him because they love him. So I can't see them being too troubled about this at places like Facebook and Twitter.
No, and there's also some other news, not really related directly, but still kind of the Trump name's in there, with the app, of course, and out there. What was it called? Can't even remember, it was some stupid name, wasn't it? But either way, it's Getter, that's it, because it was a bit, not the best name. It's something that's now gone and scraped a load of email addresses and account details. I think the number was 90,000, that comes to the top of my mind, off of there, which is, we've seen it before with some of these kind of like quickly made or kind of less polished and well, you know, developed apps, and seem to also involve Trump or someone else that's dodgy, you know. So yeah, that's been a problem for him as well this week. But yeah, this stuff here in terms of the call action, other, you know, you can't not write about it in some way, I guess, if you're covering tech and all this kind of stuff, when you kind of want to ignore it, but it's still, nonetheless, it made for a lot of headlines, and I think the commentary was all much the same. But sticking with stuff to do with Mark Zuckerberg and things is this news about his relationship with Sheryl Sandberg. And so this week has been kind of a lot of like whispers and kind of movements and quite some big developments, because there's also the news as well about one of the main execs leaving and moving on to another company as well, which we'll come on to. But this particular story suggests that there's a somewhat of a rift or a distancing between Mark Zuckerberg and Sheryl Sandberg around the stuff that's been going on in the last few months with and all the challenges they've had with COVID and things to do with going on in Washington, D.C. and her role and her level of influence in there. And then it was funny because this story was sort of introduced to us, I think, by Ryan Mack, who tweeted out, I think, about the fact that there was discussion internally in Facebook ahead of the kind of excerpt from this new book, where some of this detail comes from. And it was kind of made known to the teams inside Facebook. And then we saw this also, this kind of fake-looking walk-by and outdoors caught on camera by one of the news crews of Mark Zuckerberg and Sheryl Sandberg walking kind of next to each other, quite friendly. So loads of stuff in here to unpack. What do you make of kind of the book? First of all, I think is going to be a great read, whatever. But this particular story and the relationships of what's going on at Facebook.
Yeah, well, I think it's interesting that Facebook seems to be gearing up for weeks of revelations from this book as the publicity machine gears up for it. So I think there's going to be a lot more from this book. And it seems to be well reported. It seems to be well sourced. But I think the problem is with these kinds of stories is that the picture that's painted based on interviews from multiple sources, coloured by the journalist's own preconceptions and the journalist's narrative they have in mind. It might be entirely fact-based, but they have to paint a picture and tell a story through what they write. And so I can understand why Facebook may not, and Facebook employees may not agree that what is in the book and in the article is an accurate description of what's going on. So we can't say, unless you're, you know, in the inner circle at Facebook, you're not going to really know what's going on and what the exact truth is here. You're only going to either hear gossip or you're going to read about it in the press and not really know for sure. So I don't think it's worth speculating too much, but the very fact that they're being photographed together in a rather contrived way, but still being photographed together, shows that even if there's been a change in their relationship over the last few years, last few months, they're still very much on the same team. So I don't think there's that much we should read into this beyond the book's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, and just so for those who didn't catch the full sort of detail of the story, what we included in the newsletter a clip from the article, which said, so the article said, the Trump era tested a central relationship at Facebook between Sandberg and Mr. Zuckerberg, and she became increasingly isolated. Her role as the CEO's second in command was less certain with his elevation of several other execs and with her diminishing influence in Washington. And it's just this, it goes on to talk about kind of a more widely held view in the sort of upper parts of the company that Facebook was no longer led by number one and number two, but more number one and many. And given that there's is it Fujisumo, is that the name of the lady that's left this week? One of the execs has moved on this week as well to Instacart, isn't it, to become their CEO.
Yeah.
And so there's a little bit of shift and movement around in terms of the sort of the way that it operates. And certainly they've, I think it's been talked about in a couple of articles, they've put Mark Zuckerberg kind of much more front and central in terms of these feature announcements and product development stuff and being, you know, back to what he used to be a bit more like. And then he kind of went quiet for a number of years and now he's all over the place and dropping in all sorts of stuff. So yes, it's quite a lot of salacious gossip, but I'm not sure at the moment it's revealing loads of stuff that is going to shock the world on this one. Talking about execs from Facebook, which is quickly quick plug for the podcast that we're doing next week we're doing this podcast I mentioned at the beginning, but we're going to do it as a Twitter space next week as the first one. And it's me and Martin, and we're chatting to Will Cathcart from WhatsApp, who's the head of WhatsApp, and he's going to come along and chat on Thursday at 4:30 p.m. UK time next Thursday, and probably chat for about half an hour, 45 minutes, about things to do with messaging, sort of the relationships between the apps, like the integration in the background of, you know, Instagram and Messenger and WhatsApp, some of the stuff that we've probably talked about on this Twitter space around, you know, some of the, you know, not so great communication and PR for some of their privacy features and changes in their rules, and a whole load of other stuff that other people want us to chat about. So yeah, if you're interested in that, that's next Thursday. It's going to be good. And we've got over the next few weeks and months, we've got quite a few really cool guests from the world of social media that will be joining us. So it's going to be good.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Let's jump into some other bits and bobs. So what do we got? So Facebook funded this study this week, didn't it? That has found that Apple, unsurprisingly, that Apple and Google stifles competition with its default mobile apps. I don't know how much you have to lean on the fact that Facebook funded it versus what it's discovered and how much is tainted by all of that. But nonetheless, in terms of if you believe the details of the report, it shows probably what most people might have guessed, that the fact that these default apps kind of have quite a big piece of real estate on these phones and limit potentially other ones being there in their place, and there's not much competition there, that it's they dominate the charts as to the apps that people open most and use most in certain categories and things. Is there any value in it because it's funded by Facebook, or do you think it still makes a reasonable point?
I mean, it seems to make a reasonable point. I don't think it's anything that anyone would be surprised by, like you say. I think really what we can read from this is that Facebook is lining up a stream of PR and potentially useful things in antitrust cases and court cases and things that it can use as ammunition in the future to help put its side across, especially against Apple in its disputes against them. So yeah, not really surprising at all. Just a useful bit of corporate positioning and comms to fund a study like this. Yes, it is kind of convenient that the study found something that would be useful to Facebook.
Yeah, and Facebook is also building its own city. I think I knew this, or there was news about this some time ago, so I'm not sure for everyone else if it's news, but certainly there was more details in it. Was on Hacker Noon, I think, and goes into a bit more detail about kind of the scale of what this basically Facebook city. It paints a great sort of episode of Black Mirror sort of style, doesn't it? But at the same time, it kind of makes sense with the scale of Facebook as an operation, and it's not like forcing people to live there, so it's just a unique and it's not the first, surely Google or something must have similar. I'm not from that neck of the woods.
I don't think there's anything quite like that on that scale. Certainly, states like Nevada are trying to bring people like tech companies in to set up massive towns of their own where they can set their own rules and things like that. So I think for companies that need to hire lots and lots of people and give them a certain standard of life without paying massive salaries. So, you know, if you're in Silicon Valley, for example, you've got to pay so much to people just to live there, to afford the cost of living. You know, people talk about the high salaries of engineers at places like Facebook get. A lot of that is just because there's a lot of competition for them for a salary, but also the cost of living in San Francisco and Silicon Valley is enormous, like eye-watering. So if Facebook can have its own little town where it controls things a lot more, then that's good for it. So yeah, it's a bit less extreme than the Nevada example, where they can have their own laws and things. And I don't know if that's actually going to go ahead. That was something that was being mooted a few months ago, but it's interesting to see a lot of this happening.
Yep. Other things to do with Google and Facebook, there was a story this week about Google removing 9 apps from the Play Store for stealing users of Facebook's passwords. And it says that the apps that they found, these researchers uncovered, which were sort of sneakily getting the Facebook login details through this app on Google Play, these apps were downloaded 5.8 million times. As to how many successes there it had, I haven't gone into there's quite a lot of detail in here from the actual research papers. It might be worth digging into if you were curious to know what the outcome of it all was. But certainly on face value of the headline, it's not a particularly great one for either Google or Facebook, I wouldn't imagine. What else have we got? Twitter. So there's been more developments this week around Twitter and it having to comply with these kind of international rules by the different countries it's kind of in. So Russia and is it Nigeria and now India as well, of course, is placing quite specific, strict rules around the, you know, the operations of these platforms in order to kind of maintain some legal protections and keep being able to be used in these countries. And so Twitter's kind of been given an ultimatum pretty much by the Indian government, which meant they had to abide by some of the latest rules, otherwise face losing their legal immunity. So they've started to put in place hiring certain roles that they need to hire for to kind of comply with this law. But it does say, I think, in the Reuters article that I read about it, that, you know, it doesn't mean that they won't challenge it. They're just biding their time, I guess, whilst they're trying to figure out what to do. It's getting smaller and smaller in terms of options here for Twitter and these other companies. Every week we seem to have talked about it and someone else plays their next hand in this game. And now it's down to this. So I'm not sure where it goes after this. What do you reckon?
Yeah, well, it's going to come down to crunch time where these companies, and I keep saying this, and we'll see what happens. But I think at some point they're going to have to decide whether they're going to really go through with. They're going to be presented with a situation where the government will say you've got to remove all of these posts, and you know, you'll be in massive trouble if you don't. And at some point, that's going to have real repercussions on freedom of speech, but also beyond the country where it happens, it's going to have blowback reputationally. I always think back to the time that Google pulled out of China because it was getting so much blowback in America from the compromises it had to make in order to do business there in terms of kind of user surveillance and censorship and things like that, that it had to pull out. This was years ago. And I can't see that not happening if you look at the kind of censorship that is being mandated and being lined up in places like India and Russia.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it continues to escalate and it's kind of reaching sort of the max of that, I think, like you were just saying. So we'll see what they do next in kind of the ongoing saga with it all. Some news about Clubhouse. I was just, before we came into this space, I tweeted because I saw Clubhouse on my second or third screen of scrolling of apps. And I went, oh, I haven't opened that. And I was thinking back to when I would have opened it and I could remember when it was. And I think the last time I opened the Clubhouse app was 22 days ago. And even then, it was just to see if there was a new feature in there. I wasn't really interested in using it. So it shows you how much I care about it. But look, quite a few people have said to me the same. So I don't think I'm the only one who's kind of not really there anymore, or as much as they were. The reason I mentioned Clubhouse is because there was a story that came out this week on The Verge and a few other places about the NFL. So the NFL had previously done a lot of kind of paid or kind of co-branded kind of stuff with Clubhouse and used Clubhouse as kind of its audio app of choice, being that probably was one of the few at the very beginning that you could use. But they've switched and now got this kind of deal, quite a big deal it seems, with Twitter Spaces. So they're going to hold like 20 different Twitter Spaces throughout the NFL season coming up, and with lots of clips and other features. And they're also going to open up to some of the other brand sponsors of the NFL as well to kind of participate in these spaces. So starting to see the signs of branded Twitter Spaces and bigger names using it. Have you seen any other ones? I don't think I've seen any.
I've not seen anything on that scale. I think what we're seeing now, though, is that how this kind of live audio is becoming professionalized and becoming something a bit more than just let's have an ad hoc room and have a chat. Let's get Elon Musk in as a bit of a novelty, that kind of thing. It's turning into something a bit more programmed and a bit more professional and a bit more branded and all of that. So it's interesting to see. It's a maturing medium. It's maturing very quickly. So it's good to see. I think that with that, though, is that they're going to need some better tools, because are they really going to have people? Are the NFL going to be sitting talking to their phones to do this? and I know that they're bringing the ability to speak to the desktop, which will definitely help. That's in the quick hit section this week of the newsletter that Twitter is going to let people. It's working on letting people actually. You can already listen to Spaces on the web on desktop, but they're actually going to let you talk other web as well. So if you can plug in a decent quality USB mic, that's great. What I'd love to see, though, is I'd love to see one of these social audio companies, whether it's Twitter, whether it's Spotify or whoever, acquire a company like Riverside FM or Squadcast, these live podcasting tools that are really mature and let you record in a really high quality. But if you could also stream to, say, Twitter Spaces from somewhere like Riverside, that would be brilliant.
I would imagine that what they'll do with that, they'll just be one of those kind of their partnership things that they have. You know, they have like marketing partners for Facebook and they have all the sort of vendors that have all the tools. I would imagine that's probably how it will be done. Opening up the API for it and then kind of building it into kind of the publishing creator tools. Who knows? Yeah, I think it would be much useful for certainly more professional use of it when more brands want to start playing around and need to do it in kind of those sort of circumstances. Let's have a look at some other bits and pieces. We've also got TikTok. Yeah, wants to send video resumes. So there's a basically like a LinkedIn / whatever thing you want to stick in the headline to tie it to the fact that it's a jobs resume type feature. TikTok's kind of expanding upon that for a very kind of narrow set of jobs for a sort of subset of its users, I would say. But it goes to show again, like I keep reading different stories each week about really creative ways people are using TikTok and beyond the obvious of kind of funny short videos or kind of other kind of informative kind of videos. There's just all this other stuff going on. And I guess TikTok's leaning into a lot of these kind of areas of interest in finding ways to kind of, whether it's create spaces for creators to monetize or for themselves to make some money and expand the app. It's not quite got to the stage where it's Instagram bloat with features, but it's certainly got room to add a few more bits and pieces in there. What else have we got? TikTok, unsurprisingly, for the however many months in a row it's had it now, is the most downloaded app again for June globally across, I think, most. Is it just, I think it's both all platforms. So that's Android and iOS as well. And there's a stat that we've highlighted in the newsletter as well about TikTok now being more time spent using TikTok than Facebook in the US. I think there's some other countries as well, which I think was probably what we expected by this point, given the lockdown we've been in and all the. I can't get away from TikTok anymore. Like now that it's on the football everywhere, it's like literally every advert, everything, they're just blanket advertising. You can't get away from it all. This story about YouTube this week was, what did you pick this up about the algorithm directing views to false and sexualized videos and stuff? What did you make of all of this? Because there's, constant criticism of the platforms in terms of their algorithms and do they kind of have bias built in them or are they, created in such a way that kind of incentivizes the wrong behaviors and all this sort of stuff. And this is one where it's the recommended videos that YouTube serves up. They used, I think it was a plugin, wasn't it? A Chrome extension that the study used to track by agreement with the users of YouTube when they were watching YouTube videos and then seeing any video that they thought was inappropriate or things that shouldn't be up there, how many of those videos were things that the algorithm had purposely steered you towards and told you to kind of have a look at versus ones they'd search for themselves. And there was just the numbers were really interesting in there. And it's in the Wall Street Journal, but I think a lot of other places picked it up. Not particularly good message for YouTube, but I suspect that if they did a drains up on many of these algorithms that they might get very similar results. What do you think?
Yeah, it's a reminder of just how huge the scale of the problem places like YouTube have. Obviously, they've made improvements over the years. I don't think it's, from my own experience, it's not as bad as it used to be, where you just seem to get directed to conspiracy theory videos no matter what you were watching. You ended up somewhere, someone saying 9/11 was an inside job or something, you know. It's a lot better than it was, but they clearly have a long way to go. And it's interesting because it's the kind of thing that you don't necessarily get unless you have this kind of extension that can save this kind of data. And it's been interesting to see some social platforms actually blocking this kind of thing. Facebook has tried to stop this kind of study happening, but it's worked for Mozilla with YouTube here. And studies like this are really, really valuable as long as the research is being done with rigor. And so I think that, to be honest, I think that social networks should allow this kind of thing and should actually welcome this kind of thing as a kind of external audit of what they're doing and how well they're doing. For example, some VPN software will have an external audit to prove that they're not doing anything dodgy with your data. I think that in this kind of case, I think having algorithmic audits from the outside and a kind of seal of approval for how well they're doing is probably a worthwhile thing.
I for a long time, and maybe to some degree still do, think that that's the same, because I read lots of articles about one of some ideas that different regulators were thinking. I think even the British government were thinking of having kind of like a council that looks at algorithms, you know, something that's kind of developed specifically for that kind of auditing of it. But I also seem to remember listening to I don't know if it was someone from Facebook, one of the execs from there or somewhere else, talking about that idea and the, as with all of these things, the inherent problems that people may not have actually thought about and how tricky that would be, and actually would it serve as a purpose. So I'm kind of unsure as to the value of it at the moment, but worth noting that in this week's newsletter we had a story where Facebook has commissioned a report that basically slaps horrible stuff against its competitors, and Mozilla versus Chrome on the browser front. Mozilla has also just done the same with look what YouTube are up to and what Google's up to. So I love the fact that they're all just throwing mud at each other at the moment. What else we got in the news? Some little features from new YouTube, but some of them more significant for creators, where there's one where they've teamed up with this company where you can create, if you're a creator, custom rewards for your channel's members with this partnership with I think it's got Emojam, I think that's what I'm saying is right. And you can create like custom gifts and like kind of digital frames and rewards and things. So it's another kind of string when you're to your bow when you're in YouTube in terms of tools to use to kind of monetize from, and lots of these things are cropping up at the moment. YouTube Shorts. Have you been playing with YouTube Shorts yet? Have you seen much of it when you've been in YouTube? Because I haven't.
I haven't got it on my account yet, as far as I can see.
I occasionally see some in there, but I haven't seen a huge amount of them. But someone was chatting to me this week. There's an article on Android Central, and I did a quote for them about, you know, that actually YouTube is really in a strong position, but compared to some of the other platforms out there, if it really wants to compete with, you know, TikTok, given the amount of content that exists already on YouTube and the ways that they could help that to be part of the kind of the creation cycle, much like TikTok does with audio, it's kind of, you know, rejuvenated kind of that kind of use of video and how people create videos and stuff. But there's a great article, Android Central, and why YouTube video shorts is the best position to compete with TikTok is worth a read. I'm going to scroll a bit down so we get about 10, 15 minutes to see. Yeah, this cropped up. There's this new feature from Instagram this week that someone made me aware of called Limits. And it's kind of along the same way of limiting actions on accounts to kind of give you more control if you're being trolled or harassed or whatever. But this feature kind of gives you a couple of extra options for when you're kind of being targeted by abuse by groups of people and sort of getting in before that pain hits. If you're somebody that's, you know, gets a gang of people want to counsel you or whatever, then this might be useful for you. So Social Media Today have covered it, and I think maybe a few others by now, because it was only yesterday someone pointed out to me. But if a small number of people have got it, I think I found it if you went to your settings and then privacy, and then in the list of all the different privacy options, there's one that says limits at the top if you've got it. One of my accounts has, one of them hasn't, so maybe have a look. loads of stuff in quick hits, but I don't propose to go through all of them. I think is probably more of a, it's just too much in there this week again. But there's loads of stuff about new features on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, WhatsApp, things that probably haven't quite made the news, but maybe be interesting to people who want to know what's going on or coming down the line for these platforms. Some of them have made, like TechCrunch have covered some of them, but a lot of them haven't. And it's the same characters that are the sources. So great thanks to like Jane Wong, of course, and Alex, who's on Twitter as Alex193A. And there's a whole host of other names you'll start seeing regularly. Testing Catalog is another one that's really good. They're all great accounts on Twitter that share and leak all this kind of stuff. So
I'll tell you the one I really like this week in quick hits. YouTube working on unlockable achievements to keep creators incentivized. So when you reach certain milestones with your subscribers and things like that, you get a new achievement badge to add to your account. So I think gamification isn't dead. It's like
never gone away, has it?
All over again.
I love it. I'm a sucker for apps which are, there's no need for me to have like a completion goal step thing, but they stick it in there as a little reward. And I find myself trying to make sure the psychology of needing to complete something and, you know, not leave it there and, you know, unsorted. But anyway, let's have a look at the weekend reads, because there were some really good ones. The one that is at the top of the weekend reads this week is How TikTok Products Go Viral on Vox. And it's really interesting to sort of see how this quite significant shift in how people consume, buy products, become aware of the products, and the speed at which particularly TikTok's algorithm can suddenly propel them to kind of astronomical levels of, I need that thing from that small supermarket is selling a really not that special product, but everyone needs to have it now. Or the Amazon product, which is like, it draws your curtains for you. You stick a little, completely useless things, but are really fun. It talks a little bit about, you know, how companies are really taking advantage of it, and both small little brands and companies making like products that they're getting them made in China and then shipping them out in bulk, through to brands that are actually seeing how they can use this really effectively. And but they have to be really ready for the sudden inload of kind of orders, because it can go viral so quickly. Have you bought any products after seeing them on TikTok? Yeah,
I haven't. I'll be honest, they do strike me as the next generation of those really bad adverts you see on like cable TV late at night, or like Comedy Central or something, and then you switch your TV off and the next morning you turn it on and that channel comes on, but there's nothing on the channel, so they've got these really bad infomercials for the super duster that can dust your whole house with one wipe, and that kind of thing. It does kind of strike me as those kinds of things, but maybe aimed at a younger audience. But hey, if it works, it works. So it's interesting to see what's old just keeps coming back in new ways.
Yes, and one of the other ones, before I'll let you pick which ones you're liking this week, was the one that Facebook put out, actually. It was a bit of their kind of more in-depth sort of explanations and details around how the teams developing the products and the company as a whole come up against these really difficult dilemmas over things that there's no real regulation for, and there's never going to be a yes or a no, a binary yes no answer, and be right or wrong in terms of a decision that's a feature that could be built, could benefit all these people because it serves all of these great purposes. Yeah, it will, for a certain group of users, may have a negative impact. And how do you weigh up which one to go? And I find it really interesting. And it's not just about, you know, Facebook saying, oh, we've got a tough job, isn't it? Poor us. It's actually quite a sensible, decent read about those benefits and trade-offs that they have to kind of think about when developing products and features. What did you pick up? There's a few other ones in there. What did you read this week?
Yeah, we talked about TikTok being used in all sorts of interesting ways. And there was one this week from NBC News. TikTok is taking the book industry by storm, and retailers are taking notice. How BookTok has sent old books back to the top of bestseller lists and helped launch careers of new authors. Just interesting to see another dimension of how a new medium, which you can argue TikTok is a new take on video, a fresh take on video, is slowly being adopted by far more different types of people and been used in far more different types of ways than just the fun comedy viral videos and dances and things which it's known for. So just well worth looking into in terms of another dimension on TikTok.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a few other pieces in there as well. There's an article about how sort of AI tech has been used to sort of monitor social media by the police, and you know, how far is too far in terms of kind of that surveillance and tech. And there's lots of talk about this in other places, but you know, one of the pieces around does Facebook not taking a cut of creators' fees at the which is what it's planning to do for a short period with some of its newer products like Bulletin and maybe its audio products, is that predatory pricing? Is that unfair tactics, or is that all completely fair game? Because that's not new. It's like, I think when I was studying business at university in 2002 or whatever it was, you know, those were sort of stuff that in the textbooks were talking about supermarkets, you know, like they price it low, make a loss, get people in the stores and then dominate in terms of products on the ends of aisles to kind of catch your eye and stuff. This is just that again, in terms of, you know, Facebook kind of got the scale and the profits to be able to absorb some of this cost and survive a bit longer to hopefully maybe flush out some of the competitors. But how far can you go with that with a company that's the size of Facebook before it's actually unreasonable? And the thing is, I guess, tracking how much impact it really has on the other businesses, which I guess they'd argue about to the cows come home, I would have thought. But do you think fair game or not?
I thought it was an interesting perspective. It was an interesting perspective. So that was by Will Aramis, who is now
Washington Post.
Yeah, he's just moved over to the Washington Post as a analysis writer for technology news over there. And I thought it was an interesting idea and an interesting perspective that maybe hasn't been discussed much before. When you look at kind of, hey, we're not taking a cut for 2 years or whatever, and I think there's something in it, but at the same time, you really do have to, you have to look at the impact it has rather than the impact you assume it has, because in the end, people will go. I mean, price is obviously one thing, and how much money you get from it, but tools are another thing, and community, and all these other things are also important. So, will Facebook win over creators by not taking a cut for a certain amount of time? Possibly some, but I think the competitive landscape is so broad that you have some people who will say, well, I'd never even consider going to Facebook, even if they're not taking a cut. Or you'd have other people saying, well, yeah, I might spread around a bit and do some on Facebook and some elsewhere. And so I wonder whether it's in danger of being overblown to worry too much about it, but an interesting perspective at least.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I'm going to start bringing it all to a close. Before we do wrap things up, I just want to know, where are you going to be on Sunday when England win the Euros? Because that's what's going to happen on Sunday. Are you going to be anywhere special to celebrate that moment, or?
Well, I'll be at home. What time's kickoff?
I'd imagine it's 8, isn't it? It would normally be, I would have thought.
I'll be hoping my kids are asleep, and then I'll be quickly catching the second half and nail-biting it right till the end, or watching through my hands as Italy score a million goals. But no, that's not going to happen. It's coming home. It's happening.
My kids are going to want to watch it, I think, so they're going to have a late night, and I don't mind it. You know, I think there's absolutely every parental reason I can sort of justify to my school the next day that they need is a moment of history potentially. Before we let everyone go, then next week, if you want to hear from the head of WhatsApp, Will, he's going to be on the show on Thursday at 4:30 on Twitter Spaces, 4:30 UK time Thursday, talking about everything that WhatsApp's up to, and we're going to quiz him on all sorts of other bits and pieces as well. And if you haven't seen the newsletter yet this week, and that's what we've just been going through, then if you look at the top of this space, you'll find the links to both the next week's podcast episode in Twitter Space, but also the link to the newsletter, so you can subscribe to it and do whatever you want with it. Hopefully it's useful. Right, I'm going to head off and get ready for this winning weekend for England, and I will speak to you all next week. Have a good one, though.